Business link work. As a large company in the southeast of England, there was pressure to be involved in regional initiatives. One of these current ones was the TEC, Training and Enterprise Council, and Business Link. From what I was told, our chief executive sat on the managing board for the Sussex TEC and had been critical of the piecemeal approach to strategy, as well as the confusion of service provision by these two organisations and the regional chambers of commerce. As a solution, he offered practical support in the form of two of his senior managers to fact find and publish recommendations in reports. Our outgoing personnel director, Chris, was one. I was the other, although I was reassured it was not an exit route. Our chief executive gave us a short briefing and explained that the main objective was to get these agencies to work together, and that an independent report may help to reveal the shortcomings of the present arrangements. My report was to cover what the various agencies could do to better cooperate in unified economic strategy for the county, whilst the other report was to look at improving skills and training. The initiative was to be launched at a large event in Brighton later that month. I gathered together as much relevant material as I could, and together with some research from economic and business data we held, put together a short presentation on the strengths and weaknesses of the county and covered the agencies engaged in the development with a call to them to become engaged in the study and the report. I tried to strike a balance between complementing some achievements and provocation for more and better actions. The event turned out to be larger than I expected, and it was the first time I'd spoken in front of over 500 people, unless you count my radio experience and believe BBC audience data, but at least I couldn't see that audience. There were a number of other topics presented at the event, and judging by the conversations at coffee afterwards, much of the audience knew one another, whereas Chris and myself were unknowns, but represented an important player and employer in the area, and all the more influential since privatisation. Our presentations were politely received, although I worried that there could be an element of what do these two bozos know about this. Afterwards, a few people came up to us and asked to be involved, and it was reassuring that some of them represented organisations that the chief exec had suggested needed to be involved. The next stage was to call together a working group of these representatives and follow up with any that we felt were missing from the piece. At the first meeting, there were over a dozen people, a mixture of economic development agencies such as the TEC, Chamber of Commerce, etc., as well as the two county councils of East and West Sussex, and some from unitary authorities such as Brighton, as well as Sussex University. There was also a cross-section of business reps from various sectors, including one of the bank's senior managers. At the first meeting, we concentrated on drawing up terms of reference, scope, methodology and timescales, as well as the objectives. These are typed up and faxed out to members and copied to the TEC board members. Within hours, I seemed to have made a powerful enemy, as the next morning my phone rang, and it was the chief executive of East Sussex Council. These minutes and terms of reference had been sent out before I had a chance to agree them. I pointed out that as he wasn't at the meeting, it was difficult to see how he could accurately agree them. I assumed his representative on the group had been able to speak for his organisation, but if not, could he perhaps nominate somebody who could, or perhaps intend himself? Has your chief executive agreed this? Again, I politely explained that he had been sent a copy the same time as everyone else, but had delegated the project to me. He clearly wasn't happy. By the time I got to see my chief exec, he'd already had a phone call, which he was laughing about, having apparently enjoyed giving a lecture on the speed and delegation in the private sector to the council leader. Just keep on doing what you're doing. This whole area needs waking up if they're to achieve anything. The next few weeks, I visited all the group members and some other places recommended, including an early cyber cafe facility, tourism offices and other workplaces. It shows how times had changed when it was thought that in the mid-1990s people needed to go to a specific location outside their home to get internet access. I arranged the first meeting for the two county directors of education to compare issues, which to my amazement had never happened before for them. The businesses are frank in their criticism of the structural weaknesses in the economy. Their examples included poor east-west transport communications, difficulties in the decline in seaside towns, the reliance on certain dominant sectors, and the competition for labour with London. It was an interesting exercise, and although we had researched aspects of the local economy for our own business plans, I learned more about the area from different perspectives. Chris compared notes with me on his findings on training and skills, which complemented my own information, and I passed on my findings. Whilst I found the exercise interesting, and it took me outside my own environment for a while, and also gave me a better perspective of the challenges faced by businesses and organisations in the county I lived in, I'm afraid it also developed in me a healthy cynicism when I hear that a report has been commissioned, as often you worry post-publication that they just get filed away on shelves. Earlier in my career, I'd helped promote the company's sponsorship of an innovation centre on the campus at Sussex University to incubate start-up companies for postgraduates with business ideas. Shared facilities were there, such as legal services, financial advice and office bureaus. I felt that more such practical initiatives were needed to build on any strategy that was written. Strategy and Regulation Group. As with many things, you are not always aware that some of your actions or things you get involved in will have benefits to be realised later. The business development and planning work had raised my profile after the success of the ESB joint venture and the establishment of our first deregulated gas business. One of the corporate functions to be part of the new Slimline head office was a think tank to advise the chief executive, and it was christened the SRG, abbreviated from the mouthful of Strategy and Regulation Group. It was to be headed by a senior manager at director level who reported to the chief exec and would have 8 or 10 staff in a flat structure, the mix of senior managers and relatively recent graduates considered to be rising stars. I was pleased to be asked to join as one of the first recruits and reassured that there had been some recognition of my successes in business planning and development and in setting up our consultancy and gas businesses. What the new group would be doing was more uncertain, but initially I needed to ensure that other members of my now defunct business planning department were found new jobs, and in a company undergoing a major reorganisation it may not be so easy. I felt a strong sense of responsibility in achieving this, as I'd personally recruited all of them, and it wasn't either my fault or theirs that our directorate was being disbanded. In the event, the relatively high profile of our group and the contributions made by the whole team in our success helped the first three of the team find new interesting positions, and the fourth member was selected to join me in the new strategy group. The formation of this new group was followed by the move to the new slimmer corporate head office from the large extended Victorian seafront building to a new build anonymous three-storey box style building in a business park in mid-Sussex outside Crawley. For shopping and eating facilities it was a backward step, but the company still retained an in-house staff restaurant which provided subsidised meals of good quality. The new office was spacious and modern, with most of the directors and senior managers either in open plan spaces or glass cubicles. The pleasant lunchtime seafront walks could be replaced by walks in the adjacent Tilgate Forest Country Park and shopping centre of Crawley, whilst less interesting than Brighton, was a short drive away. Before the move, the group started work, including advising the CEO on potential initiatives to increase efficiency in the company. For a couple of months, two of us, myself and the younger senior manager, Steve, met weekly with the chief exec to brainstorm ideas for initiatives. Some were dismissed out of hand, others were selected for further development. It was a great opportunity to work at the very top of the company in a refreshing and open way. Two things resulted from this. Firstly, we were seen in the company as people with the ear of the CEO, and to be wielding more influence than our previous positions would suggest. This was confirmed when we discovered a colleague in one of the larger engineering divisions was experimenting with a flatter structure with a philosophy similar to the Japanese Kaizen, or continuous improvement philosophy, with all his staff members encouraged to contribute their ideas. He was very enthusiastic about this, and we suggested his approach needed to be heard, and we put this to the CEO, who agreed. It was arranged that Harry would present his initiatives to the whole management group, and he agreed somewhat reluctantly. It raised his profile, and I believe it was a success, but some of the more cynical managers of functions were for a time rather cautious in speaking to us, in case they were called upon in the same way. Within the strategy group, there was also a little jealousy expressed that we'd been given direct access, at least for a time, to the CEO and board, as this was normally the role performed by our group head, Tony. It was an interesting time in a new environment with new people from different backgrounds. The work was varied, often requiring assessment of the impact on the company of external changes, whether of a competitive nature, legislation or government policy. I'd experienced enough changes in my career to know that, like everything, it would have a limited lifespan, and I enjoyed the environment while I could. Around this time, one of those out-of-the-blue opportunities came up, and it demonstrated that past endeavours can later combine in unexpected ways. I was called into the chairman and told he'd been asked by one of our advisory companies if we would be able to assist them on one of their consultancy projects. It was advising one of the state governments in India, specifically Orissa, on the privatisation of their electricity industry. The partner leading the project had returned to London for family reasons, and they needed a credible replacement. It was thought my experience establishing our own aid-funded consultancy, together with my role as privatisation manager here previously, might be what they were looking for. It was explained to me that it was voluntary, but in the meantime, could I go to their head office in the city tomorrow morning to discuss it? And a version of my CV had already been prepared quickly by human resources for me to show to them. It appeared the company had some enthusiasm for this, although I realised that the fees for a partner charged from a major consultancy would be a welcome sum to our fledgling consultancy business, and I wouldn't be seeing any of it. Nevertheless, I was flattered to be asked. The next morning found me on a train to the city offices, having discussed the offer at home, and also hoping to get back to our offices for our staff Christmas lunch, which I was reluctant to miss. The discussion seemed to go well, but I was rather pushy with the suited representative in his large, luxurious office overlooking the River Thames. There were two reasons for this. The first was that he seemed rather vague about the project details, and I felt I wanted a lot more information. The meeting was protracted while he phoned people for answers to my questions, and on several occasions left the office to get answers. The second reason was that I could see as the morning went on, the prospect of my anticipated lavish Christmas lunch was vanishing. I eventually rushed back to our office just in time for a belated Christmas lunch, during which the chairman with a big grin on his face told me he'd had two phone calls, one from the guy I met to say he'd been impressed and wanted to put forward my CV to the Indian government, and a second call from his amused assistant with details of vaccinations required and a statement that he'd been impressed with my capabilities, as few people get our head of corporate finance flustered and running around the office. My chairman was amused and darkly said it was a good job I was better behaved on home ground. In the event, the client government told the consultancy that they wouldn't allow a substitute from another company and they'd paid for a partner and expected to get one. Thankfully, this was before any vaccinations had been arranged, so my 6 months in the sun was not to be.